This podcast is supported and sponsored by my good friends at Hunted. Now, did you know that research shows having a strong employer brand will reduce your time to hire by 50%, reduce your cost per hire by 50%, improve the retention of your staff by 28%, make candidates 3 times more likely to trust you, and double the number of qualified applicants? But developing a strong employer brand is not just about creating great content. What's even more important is getting that content seen as much and as often as possible. If you have a careers page, how do you actually drive traffic to it? If you have an Instagram account, how do you grow your following? If you're creating great content, like videos or podcasts or blogs, how do you actually get it seen by more of your target audience? Hunted is the place where recruitment brands can tell their story in a way no job post ever could. Learn what works, develop a sustainable employer brand strategy, and reach more recruiters than ever before with Hunted. And I've been working really hard on getting an exclusive deal for all of you guys, for Recruitment Rollercoaster listeners. Up until the end of June, the end of this month, you can get a huge 50% off their annual subscriptions. Use the code ROLLERCOASTER50 and claim your profile today. I've had a sneak peek at what the Hunted team are up to, what they're working on, and trust me, you do not want to miss out on getting on this platform. Save money and use the amazing offer that all of you guys have access to. Claim your profile today. So the big question is this: how do the best recruiters and recruitment business owners ride the highs and lows of recruitment whilst ensuring they remain at the top? How do they stay consistent? How do they manage their time? How do they cultivate the correct mindset? And what are the best recruiters and recruitment businesses doing differently? These are the questions that all recruiters want to know the answers to. This is the podcast where I have real and honest conversations with some of the most talented recruitment professionals globally to uncover all their secrets. My name is Hisham Azouz. Welcome to the Recruitment Rollercoaster Podcast. Welcome to the Recruitment Rollercoaster Podcast. My name is Hisham Azouz. Today, I'm joined by John Guest, who is an associate director at Harper Harrison, and they are a specialist property recruitment business. They're part of the LHI group. There's 8 people in the Harper Harrison brand, and John manages a team in London. John, thank you for joining me remotely today. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Thanks, Hisham. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I like your, for those that can't see, you've got a good little setup behind you. You've got some, is that a Portsmouth top?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the boxing glove?
That's an AJ signed glove.
Really?
Yeah. I love my sport.
Nice. Did you see, obviously, the AJ Tyson Fury announcement? That's exciting.
2 fights. Yeah. Any positive in lockdown is a double positive right now. And any thought of sport coming back is
exciting,
amazing,
isn't it? Yeah. John, just a real quick one on that. Obviously, I know that you've listened to this podcast. I'm assuming you listen to other podcasts. Recently, I've been looking for, because I've just got a bit sick of listening to the same podcasts. And I've been looking for one recently, and I got recommended one called Hot Boxing.
Okay.
Have you seen it? Okay, you're gonna love it then. I'll just get this in there early because I feel like other people could enjoy it too. But the Hot Boxing podcast is hosted by Mike Tyson. It's Mike Tyson's podcast. And he has another chap on there, I can't remember his name, that co-hosts it with him. And they have some wicked guests on there. I mean, the first one that I listened to that I'd recommend everyone listening to if you're into your sports is they interviewed Sugar Ray Leonard recently.
Wow.
And honestly, mate, if you're into your boxing, you'd absolutely love it. So let me just get that in there early because I've just enjoyed it so much.
Isn't Mike Tyson coming back as well? Didn't I read that?
I know, yeah. That's just crazy, seeing those videos online. Absolutely crazy.
Got some speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the topic of sports podcasts, for those that don't listen to it but like football, the Peter Crouch podcast is brilliant.
Yeah, that's been recommended so much. I haven't actually listened to it. I need to listen to it.
It's just a bit silly and a bit funny, and he's just such a down-to-earth footballer. So he's made a second career for himself. Fair play.
Yeah.
Obviously, being a player, he gets extra kudos for that as well.
For sure. Recruitment roller coaster, John Guest. How did you enter the world of recruitment? Let's start there.
So, a bit like nearly everyone on your podcast, they grow up wanting to be a recruiter. I actually told this story at our leadership summit at the start of the year. So I didn't go to university. I had a really terrible experience at college where I did IT and just had so many different teachers and tried to throw me out of college. And the two people that I did it with ended up failing and had to do a third year. Just wasn't a great educational experience. So I was pretty much done by this point and wanted to go out and earn. Bearing in mind I'd done two A-levels in IT, I thought that's what I wanted to do. So I got a job at the local university in IT support, which was really, really boring. Being honest, like the students weren't there for the summer, so I could just sit there playing Football Manager for 4 hours. No one would even really care. They'd never fired anyone from the department because it was part of University of London. So it was a job for life, but I was just really bored. So at the time, I love cars as well. All of my mates were into cars. It was back in the day where everyone would spend their Sunday nights in Burger King car park.
I've definitely been through that phase.
Yeah, so when Halfords was full of alloy wheels and not bikes, I thought, well, if my mates want to buy these parts, why don't I just try and source them and then I can just sell them?
Okay.
And make a profit. So I ended up starting doing that. And it got to the point where so many people were coming to me that I didn't actually have time to do my job anymore. So I thought I'm going to have to quit. So at 19, I left and started my first business selling car accessories, so alloy wheels and stereos and suspension kits and stuff like that. Ended up going quite well. I built an online shop, so we had 15,000 products on there. I opened a retail store near where I live in an industrial unit with a friend's company. I did that for 2 or 3 years, and it was like great fun because you're combining what you love with your job. But I had no idea what I was doing in terms of business. I just, if you buy something for £1 and sell it for £1.10, then that's all right. So this was back before social media. So we like went on all the internet forums and we ended up sponsoring a load of them. And it was like marketing 101, really.
Yeah.
This was when we had like a live MSN messenger chat.
Well, MSN.
Wasn't a chatbot, it was actually me. So, you had to be a bit creative, but after 2-3 years of doing that, the market was starting to die, really. Cars are coming out with, insurance was so expensive, if you wanted to do anything to them. The wiring was getting more complicated. I thought I better get a real job. My girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, worked for the local paper in recruitment advertising.
Oh, wow.
And, she ended up speaking to my first recruitment business who said that they're looking. And she said, I know someone that fits what you've just told me. So she actually got me my first interview in recruitment.
Oh, wow.
So I went down there and I don't think I was like the typical background because I'd already run my own business. So I think that was a bit of a worry, but they gave me a shot and said, off you go. You can do security engineers from Birmingham upwards. Here's a phone. Crack on. So,
lovely world of recruitment. Let's go.
Exactly. Work it out as you go along.
And what year was that? I mean, online, it's around 2007, around that.
2007. So, yeah, just before, the global financial crisis in 2008. So, it was a baptism of fire.
So, obviously, so just for everyone's benefit and context then, so that was your first job in recruitment, ended up working there for nearly 3 years, it says online. Then joined another company that you then obviously worked for nearly 8 years.
Yeah.
And then you've been at Harp Harrison for, coming up 2.5 years, right? So, a decade's worth of experience in recruitment, right? So keen to uncover this. So I guess definitely keen to focus on sort of Harp Harrison and more
recently, but I guess how was that first year then when really you got chucked in the deep end? Always interested to hear about it. How was that?
I think I actually picked it up fairly quickly. My first year went pretty well before the kind of financial crisis really hit. I was working in a market security, which is needed whatever the economy anyway. You kind of need it more in a downturn. So, I mean, it did take a bit of a hit. My second year wasn't as good as my first, but I seemed to take to it quite well. I just didn't really know any better. I think where I'd come from working, running my own business and working every hour under the sun, working weekends. I used to go into the office on Saturdays. I used to always try and be the first person in.
So you had the work ethic.
Yeah, and like self-motivation, because I've been working on my own, running my own business with no one to really answer to. So
the responsibility, I think, helps a lot as well early on, doesn't it? If you're someone that's willing to be accountable, responsible.
That definitely helped. So my first year went pretty well. Second year, slightly worse. I think I probably ended up doing about 80 or 90 in my second year. My first year, I think 140. And I managed to get 3 or 4 pay rises along the way in the first couple of years.
Nice. What was the environment? Was it a big recruitment business, a small business?
So they were based in Weybridge. They had about 30 people.
Okay.
It was combination. I mean, this was just as LinkedIn was coming in. So we weren't really encouraged to use LinkedIn. We still had a fax machine to send out CVs.
Oh my God.
I remember one day someone was messing around and knocked a filing cabinet over, like an 8-10 foot tall filing cabinet into the fax machine, and smashed it. We couldn't actually send out any CVs that day. And it was just, yeah, just one of these things. So
mental.
It was a good grounding. It was a bit old school. It was a bit like, you need to be on the phone all the time. There's no need to worry about anything else. The markets that they worked in were like telecoms, foreign security, IT. It was run by a good guy, but I just felt after 2.5-3 years, there was something better for me. Mm. I managed to get my commission up from 2.5% when I started up to 10% when I left.
Fucking hell.
And when I started looking around, some companies were paying a lot more than that. And I felt, you know, I want to make something of myself. I want to get a house. I want to, you know, go on and achieve my potential. So started looking around.
Mm. I think I think it's easy to forget that back then it's really hard to sort of even have a perspective of what other recruitment businesses might offer or what it might look like on the other side. Because that's just been a huge, obviously there's pros and cons to that, right? Because now you're spoiled for choice and there's so many things coming at you. But I think it's so easy to forget that, I mean, what, that was in 2007, 2008, still sending CVs by fax. Had no idea that there's other...
Some clients didn't have email though, because, you know, if you're an engineering business or a service business, you're not necessarily owned by... You're probably owned by someone that was an engineer.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily a tech specialist. Mm. So last to bring that kind of email and stuff in.
Mm. So then obviously that's when you went and joined Eligo Recruitment, that you had a real long tenure there. I guess you can link it to sort of when you then went to Harb Harrison as well. But I think always interested to hear sort of your perspective and mindset and thoughts when you was looking for another recruitment job and join another recruitment company. I think obviously now I'm sure over the sort of last 10 years when you've hired for your own team, like it's really common to see someone that got the experience that you did at that first company leave and then they end up there for like a couple of months, then end up somewhere else. They might stay there for a long period or end up there. And I think it can be really difficult for a lot of people to sort of make a good move following that first recruitment job. So I guess what's been your mindset when you've looked for to progress your career, basically? What was important to you and how did you approach it?
They're both really, really different. So. You know, when I left my first company to join Eligo, I didn't really have anything to lose. I still lived at home.
Yeah, okay.
I backed myself. I didn't have much responsibility in life. And actually, it was a business that was 10, 12 people.
Yeah.
So you felt like you knew everyone straight away and you became quite a big part of the culture. on day one. We worked in a funny little office in Putney Bridge, where some were in one room, some were in the other. It was not the nicest office, but it was in a good location, good bunch of people. We had a lot of fun. It was kind of the opposite, really, and they really allowed you to be yourself. So, yeah, I didn't really find that difficult. I kind of felt at home pretty soon.
And fair enough.
Probably part of the reason I stayed so long was there was always a new challenge for me. I started the division for them. They'd never done fire and security or building services before. So I kind of brought them this idea, and they said, well, why don't you start a business within a business? We broke it off a couple of years later to be a bit of a separate entity as it grew. But when I moved on after 7 odd years there, that was a much, much tougher decision.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, that's a whole different ballgame.
I had mortgage, just about to have a child for the first time. I actually started in February with Harper Harrison in 2018, and William was born in March.
Wow.
5 or 6 weeks.
Why is that? That's so common. Why is that, like, either moving job or starting your own business when you have a child? Is there sometimes a moment where it's like, well, if I don't sort of change my circumstances or change something now, then I'll find it even more difficult once I've had a child?
That does play a part. I think you start to think a bit differently about life itself. That doesn't sound too old. It does change your mindset and what motivates you, and you tend to reflect on why you're doing this. And you realize maybe that there's a few things that you'd like to change. But going from a business where you knew everyone really well to a business like LHI, where you walked into an office in London, there was kind of 60 people, 50 people at the time, and you know one. I was a no one. Okay, I'd been hired at a certain level, which was quite rare for them to hire at my level before. But yeah, it was scary. I looked around and everyone's looking back at you thinking, this person's been hired in a level often above people. You know, what's he got really? You know, is he actually going to be good? And to be honest, I didn't start brilliantly. It took me, I changed sector, started a family, started commuting into London, changed company. So all at the same time, my first few offers, I couldn't get them over the line. So it took me 4 or 5 months to do my first deal. Going from doing one every week, one every 2 weeks with a lower fee, that's a weird experience. I had to almost take myself out, have a look at my process and kind of build it back up again for a different market. It was a different kind of candidate you were dealing with. So it was tough. My confidence took a knock. I did doubt myself a little bit, but I kind of had to take myself back, remember why I'd got this far. I always had in my mind, when people join a business, it's those that come in and are really loud that never make it. So I was always conscious to just be kind of humble, hardworking, try and be kind to everyone, trying to get to know people and then let the results speak. And after that initial 6 months, I think the following 6 months, I went on to build the most in Europe.
Oh, wow.
So I actually qualified for a trip to the Bahamas, which was unbelievable until I found out I couldn't go. Because my dad was taken ill. But I felt like I'd arrived after 9 months.
Maybe. Okay. So really keen to dig into this. Really keen to dig into that experience, John, because I think a lot of people would have experienced what you've gone through or might even be in that hardship right now. But just quickly, because let's just touch on the sort of period of you building up a separate entity within a business at Aligo. Just a bit of context, did you end up managing a team, or what did sort of the entity look like before you left? Just so we know where it got to in that sort of seven-year-ish period.
At its peak, we had a team of 8. It's quite a small niche that we were operating in, but I think it would be fair to say that we were one of the best-known brands in that sector. I was always a fan of getting out there, so I'd always try and meet as many people as possible. And because we were recruiting across the whole of the UK, people don't always quite realise what that means. You know, if you've just recruited in London, where most of your clients are within 15 minutes, you know, I was recruiting. One of my best clients was based north of Bradford.
Oh, wow.
Would leave the house at 5 a.m., 3.5 hours in the car to see them. And I go and see them at least once a year. We'd have clients in Oldham. We'd have clients in Cardiff. I'd travel all over the place. So we get out to every event possible. Ended up exhibiting at a lot of the industry events. And we just tried to become omnipresent on social media at events. So that I always believe that when a client comes to you, the whole thing is 5 to 10 times easier. Mm. When you're trying to like bring in people that don't have experience, you want to make the path as easy as possible for them. So if you can give them qualified opportunities where you've kind of taken control of it and come onto the front end of it rather than trying to pick it up late and wrestle against everyone else, it's just a lot more enjoyable experience. So the more we focused on our brand and the more we kind of put ourselves out there, the more it started to pay back. Mm. Like, yeah, peak to eight.
So maybe you sort of just answered it, but what I just wanted you to talk a bit about was sort of what you put down the what do you put down to the like why that was successful, why you managed to grow it to eight people, or why you managed to make it a success. It clearly sounds like the branding piece and making sure that, as you said, it was omnipresent with the niche, it was is a factor. But what were the sort of key parts as to why you think you was able to build that part of the business or the part of their business from scratch, you think?
Work ethic, speaking to as many people as possible and trying to build relationships in whichever way you can. Try and get people to see you as a human rather than just someone that can find them CDs. Mm. So hence going to meet as many people as possible. Once they meet you, they tend to trust you more, see you a little bit different to every recruiter. You just use every opportunity to elevate yourself above the noise. You want to be that person that the client or candidate thinks of the minute they think about hiring someone or making a change. So I tried to instill that in all the people we hired, encourage them to get out there, encourage them to fail, share those failings with us. It's fine. Like if you're not failing, you're probably not taking any risks. You're not trying anything. But yeah, I think sticking to those core values of client relationships, adding value, just not just being a transactional recruiter and trying, when you get into a client, try and then smother it as best as possible.
Mm. And what was your management experience like then? Because obviously you've never done that before. Well, that's a real common challenge for a lot of people. So obviously you joined as someone that was like, right, this is the sort of niche that I'm confident I can build out with your support. Obviously you went on to do that. So what was your journey in managing? So you just spoke about your values, which I absolutely love, but what was your journey in management like?
Well, I actually started leading in my first company.
Okay.
At the age of 21, 22, I got given a resourcer who is actually still one of my best friends.
Really?
He was bridesmaid at our wedding, my wife's best friend. So
that's awesome.
Pretty cool. But I think to start with, I was absolutely terrible. And I'm by no means saying that I'm the finished article now, but I thought everyone was the same as me.
Mm.
I thought everyone was driven by the same things. But clearly they're not. part of my learning over the years has been trying to get under the skin of people's why, and everyone's why tends to be a little bit different. Like how to motivate them, why they're doing this, what they think good looks like. Just try and have really honest conversations in the interview process and then continue those. We kind of make it one of our commitments as leaders in our group now that if asked, you should know your team's why.
Mm.
That's quite tough because sometimes people ask you and you're like, actually, I knew it a year ago, but do I know it now?
Yeah, because I think it's obviously something that you hear a lot. And I think it's a hard question to answer, isn't it? And I think, as you just said, I think it can change. It does evolve. What was that, sorry?
Mine's changed a lot, my why. Definitely different now than when I started. When I started, it was just to make as much money as possible. Being honest, now it's completely different. It's trying to have a bit more of a balance, trying to provide for your family, make sure your health is good. It's like more of a balanced view and trying to make the path clearer for other people.
Mm. And I think a lot of leaders that will listen to this podcast will know that that's important to understand people's why. But I think it can be quite difficult to draw that out of people sometimes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you said that we have honest conversations and interview, and let's carry on those. But how have you got better at, I know everyone's different, of course, but how have you sort of got better at getting that out of people?
Still, it's difficult. It is difficult. Leadership and doing the job at the same time is a difficult balance to get right. And everyone that I've spoke to that's ever done it and done it successfully, then tip my hat to them. It's two jobs in one, and both those jobs conflict slightly. But I think just being more human, maybe as a leader in the past, I tried to be too much of a manager and manage by process and numbers and stuff like that, rather than managing as someone that people could, I don't know what the word is, but really just let your guard down. I've never been someone that takes myself too seriously, but I think I managed a bit seriously.
Okay, I get you, man.
But when you start to be a bit more human and you take a strip off yourself and you share your failings and you let people listen to your call.
Being vulnerable.
Yeah, you just make yourself more vulnerable. And I think people then come towards you. It's a bit like the sales process, really. If you push too hard, people will push against you. Mm. So sometimes if you pull away, they'll come with you. So it's a little bit like that for me.
And I think what you're saying there doesn't mean that you have to be their friend. I think that can be the hard thing as well, isn't it? Because what you're talking about there is then like, okay, well, does that mean I have to be the person down the pub with them or being friends with them? But it's not, is it? It's different.
Trying to get that balance right. You know, if people like you and people respect you and people trust you, then I think they'll run through a brick wall for you. If they're your friend as well, then fantastic. They're probably more likely to be honest with you at a local level. But you can go too far with that, where if someone is too close to you, then, you know, they almost don't take it as seriously.
John the manager then.
Conversation.
Mm. John the manager can be a bit difficult. It can be a bit difficult then to get the manager out of you if you've gone too far on that. That's interesting. Okay. And just on this, as we're talking about this, if I've really made the time to understand my team's why and the individual's why within it, how does that then help me as a manager? What does that then help you do?
Well, you can try and make sure that someone's personal goals marry up with the business goals as closely as possible and that they know their role in that. You can also know how often to cheer them on, like how best to motivate them. Some people react better to a tough conversation. Others, that completely demotivates them. So the better you understand that, the better you can act every day in the moment. You know, as long as you're thinking of it consciously, then you can make those decisions.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. So let's just talk about the journey at Harb Harrison, because I think there'll be loads in there that obviously you're willing to share, and it was difficult at the start. I guess let's just talk a bit about, as you've already said, that your circumstances when you was looking to leave Alego was totally different to when you joined. I guess just if you were to just add a bit more on, because I think a lot of people, as you'll know, John, like by that point you would have had what, nearly 11 years recruitment experience, director, obviously clearly a proven recruiter, biller. Like you would be getting tapped up every single day by RetorX, right? Trying to spin your head going, John, you consider this, blah, blah, blah. So I guess just quickly on that, like what did you make sure that you found out, that you saw, that you got from Harb Harrison, or when you was in that interview process, that just really helped you be confident that Harb Harrison was the place for you? Because I think that can be really difficult for a lot of recruiters that know that they want to progress their career, know that they want a new challenge, but right, they're just, obviously they can get their head turned so much. So I guess what did you sort of do in that process that made you confident in the decision that you made?
That's a good question. We give people advice on this stuff all as recruiters. You're always telling people, you know, you're helping people uncover their why and what's most important to them and stuff like that. It takes a bit of a different thinking to do it to yourself. But it had been on my mind for quite a while. I've had many sleepless nights thinking about it. To a degree, walking away from something that you've then built and become a director of and has put your name on is could be seen as failure to certain people. So there's always that in the back of your mind. But I kind of recapped on what was important to me, felt like I wanted to be a part of something bigger. Remember that you only live once. There's no dress rehearsal here. So you want to make the most of it while you're here. So what I looked for was firstly, just smart people to work with. I wanted to work with people I could learn from. And maybe I'd got to the point in my career where I didn't feel like I was growing much anymore. I think that was bothering me. I didn't look around the room and see loads of people that I thought, you know, I really want to be you, or I really want to like spend time with you. Now, on a personal level, absolutely, some fantastic people and some really good recruiters. But I just felt like I needed to level up. So when I met the guys in Hub Harrison and the wider group, there's a lot of very, very capable leaders, a lot of very good recruiters, people that, you know, I've really learned from in the last couple of years. So I think I felt like if I could find the right people, and when I met Tom, the CEO, he just said, look, it's a rocket ship. Don't worry about exactly what seat you get in, just get on. actually, I thought, you know what, that's kind of, if I find the right people, the right environment, then hopefully combine that with me backing myself to do the rest, it will be a good marriage.
And was that just, I love sort of how you put that, because I think a lot of people will find themselves in that position. I mean, the majority of the UK recruitment industry is sub 10 staff. And
yeah,
I think that must have been such a sort of a back and forth with you personally, because you've got John Guest being there for 8 years, everyone will know you, like done really great. But then if you've got no one around you inspiring you or sort of pushing you to level up your game or whatever, that must have been so hard to leave that, because that really is, it's comfortable, isn't it? And it's, you know what you need to do day in, day out. If you do this, there's a good chance I'm going to earn this year. So big fair play to you to making that leap. And I guess, like for you, obviously, I feel like it was more than just being around people that was billing more than you. It was more than that.
It's becoming a better leader as well.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn from people. I think that the recruitment part had always done fairly well, pretty successful. As I say, build well, started to grow a team, had never really got past a certain level. So I wanted to go and learn from people that have done that. And there's a whole host of different brands, characters, offices. You know, one thing you do get with the business that I work for now is everyone's always willing to talk and help. We don't hire people that are arrogant and keep themselves to themselves. Everyone is stronger together. It's like a family. So you know, when I started to meet people, I think I had 5 or 6 interviews in the end. It was quite a lengthy process. That did help with the thinking and the reassurance.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, how did you, because I feel like a lot of people will sort of resonate with that actually, you know what, that is what I'm looking for, or I am wanting to level up. But like, how did you go about fishing that out of people when you met them? Because that can be quite hard to do, can't it? Was it just gut instinct?
I think, yeah, I found this, I don't know about anyone else, but the longer you work, you learn to trust your gut more. You know, you can back it up with data and you can go and find facts and do your homework, but normally what your gut tells you is fairly close. And if it isn't, it's not the end of the world anyway. You can always make a change. And if you can have the attitude towards the whole recruitment world as that you either win or you learn, I think that helps every single day. With the title of the podcast, right, it is a roller coaster. Some days are awful. You get one phone call that literally changes whether you can go on holiday or not. Another phone call that surprises you out of nowhere, even though you've managed the process really well. You don't think someone's going to get the job and they do. It can be a bit on like a knife edge. So I think, yeah, focusing on the things you can control, trying to take the attitude out of it that if you do trust your gut and you do get it wrong, it's not the end. That helped.
Okay, so what was that? Sorry,
does that answer your question?
That's bang on. So I guess let's talk about those first 6 months then, because yeah, as you said already, John Guest, top dog, as a team, right? going into a brand new market, right? New sector, new niche that you've never done before. As you said, into a company that, as a the job title that you had, typically, I'm assuming, because you said that typically it would be they'd grow those people internally.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about that, because I think a lot of people, again, would have to go through that, or might have experienced that, or might be thinking about making a move, and this might be one of the things that's their biggest concern. So firstly, the market, that must have been really difficult to leave as well, because you've worked so hard to build that out, know inside out. So what was the mindset going in early on as to learning? And you obviously, you know how important it is to sort of know and understand the nuances of your market and how that can be part of your competitive advantage.
Yeah.
But like, what was your mindset going into that, going, right, I know fuck all about this industry? Like, what was the mindset to start really upskilling yourself in it?
Well, firstly, it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Despite what I've said, which might contradict each other, you kind of have FOMO, fear of missing out on your last market. When you've got to cut the umbilical cord, then you've got no choice. I loved my old market. It was great. I knew loads of people. I go to an event and you probably know approaching half the people in the room, you'd know, and they'd know you, which was great because you get referrals, and at the networking dinner, everyone would talk to you, and you became a part of the sector rather than an accessory. But I wanted to change and came into a new, I think as long as I could get interested in the sector more than just the money, like if the sector that I recruited in interested me, then that was important. And with property, working in London, placing people onto projects mainly in London where you're actually involved in shaping what the future of the city is going to look like is pretty cool.
Excited, yeah.
You go to those buildings, you can take people that you've hired and say, look, our client, they've built this, they've just let it out, they've just sold it. You know, you're really involved in the sector. So my mindset was, you know, I've recruited in a part of property, like building services, so more maintenance. Now I'm recruiting for more project management, which I kind of knew. So I knew what a good candidate looked like from a non-technical point of view. And I think most niches, you're never going to know all of the technical intricacies anyway. So you've got to back yourself for knowing a process. I just went and asked as many questions to as many people as possible. I think in my first year, I went on 81 client meetings.
Wow.
Then we're looking at the stats. So, you know, 2 a week, pretty much. I'd go out and meet clients that we'd either had a relationship with at some point, or that were completely new, and just ask them as many questions as they'd let me before they kicked me out.
I love that.
And
what was the what was the intention then? Was it just like, hey, like, I'm new here at Harp Harrison. I don't know. How did you approach, like, because not a lot of people like to let people know that they're new and they're not knowledgeable.
I didn't necessarily go in and say, look, I know nothing about your can I come and meet you, please? Most people in London are pretty busy, but find a way to build rapport. Anytime a company would say they're looking for someone, which in certain parts of the market, because it was quite candidate-led, a lot of companies were looking. They were a bit frustrated with their recruitment partners or process, or there was a chink in their armor that you could then explore. And then the minute they started talking, I just made it part of my process that before we start working with you, we'll come down and spend time with you. Just made it. I think I worked with a sales coach for a little while, and one of the things he said to me was, whoever's process is stronger will win.
Whoever's process.
If the buyer's process is stronger than the seller's process, they'll beat you.
Okay.
So if you're selling to someone and you have a stronger process, they'll typically be happy to be led. You've got to understand it. So if part of your process is that people meet you, normally people will go along with that. And if they don't, there might be a different reason. They might not be the best client to work with anyway. So I didn't actually find a huge amount of resistance. And bearing in mind, I was in London every day within 15-minute walk of most of these companies. It was fairly easy to be flexible. I could meet them first thing, last thing, lunchtime. Spent quite a lot of money on coffee. Found out, but equally, I'd never worked in London before, so it was great to find out, you know, more about the city. I'd walk to every meeting where possible, so I could see along the way what sites were in construction, write down the names, because every site's got like a board on the front.
Yeah.
Who's working on it? I also found where's good venues for candidates and clients to meet. So yeah, I just soaked it all up as much as possible.
I love that. And then the other part that I'd love to get your thoughts on is what was your mindset to ensure that, as you said, going in, because this can be part of the pressure that a lot of people are worried about, right? If I'm known and well respected in my current company, but if I was to move, I'd want a decent level position. But I don't know any of the people. I'm not going to have the sort of respect straight away that I currently have. So I know you sort of touched on it, but like, what was your mindset towards making sure that you wasn't perceived as a dickhead going into the new company? Do you know what I mean? And coming in at this high position that typically people don't do, how did you make sure that internally you was perceived in the wrong way? Or yeah, what was your thought process?
Just don't be one.
Yeah.
That sounds easy, and that's a bit of a flippant comment. Just be kind. Mm. Talk to people. We were based in a WeWork shared kitchen. Anytime I was out there, try and say hello, find out what people do, make sure I got as many people's names as possible, which was a real challenge. It probably took me a good month or two to know who everyone was. Join in with events, get down the pub, get to know people outside of work. Because during work hours, if you're going to make things work, I think you need to be pretty focused. You need to be pretty planned. You haven't got time necessarily to be, you know, the office butterfly fluttering around people's desks. But outside of that, there's no excuse for not being kind.
Just give me a bit of context. Did you inherit a team then? Like, did you have people to manage straight away?
Yeah, so I had a couple of people straight away. Both had experience in recruitment. I think one person that was supposed to be in my team ended up moving to Australia while I was working my notice period. So I was going to have three, I ended up with two. So I inherited a team, and one of them had been with the business quite a long time. Strong character.
Doing that sector?
She'd done another sector, and she'd moved into the sector.
Oh, okay.
A year previous, but slightly different to what the core of the team was. So that helped. I mean, same approach, really. I'd ask them as many questions as possible about what they knew.
Okay.
I'd try to gauge what of it was real and how much of it was perception.
Mm. So really difficult first 6 months then, because had obviously clearly really tried to go about it the right way, the right mindset, learn as much as possible, but it took you 6 months to really get going.
Yeah.
How the fuck did you get through that then? Because 100% you'll be having self-doubt, like, am I going to keep my job? Have I even got any respect? Like, what made you push on?
I focus on the things that I can control. I've always been pretty good at that. I don't take the losses too seriously. So yes, I did doubt myself, but not a massive amount. I have a book of, I've written down things I'm grateful for. I try and document some of my wins. If I'm ever in a bad place or have a bad day, that's a good place to go.
Love that.
Now I have a son, it's a lot easier because he's kind of around, especially during lockdown, spending time with him. It kind of reminds you why you do this, and that definitely helps. Like, go and watch an hour of Peppa Pig will take you back to...
just gives you perspective.
100%.
Yeah, I love that.
It's tougher for me, I think, because in my sector before, the fees were a lot lower. You know, you're talking average fee of $5,000, maybe. So I think, from memory, my best year in my business before, I did approaching 60 deals, so more than one a week. And to go then to doing none for that period of time was difficult, really difficult.
Yeah.
I had a couple of offers that didn't close because I hadn't really, I think maybe self-doubt manifested itself in not asking some of the tougher questions, which I definitely do now. But I see it as a positive. That made me level up again. It made me look at the process and also that of the team, kind of break it down and build it back up again. And we were dealing with much higher fees, much higher salaries. In hindsight, I wish I'd moved to higher salaries, higher fees sooner, because I think it is actually easier in many ways. Like, people take the whole process more seriously. But there is a clear difference in terms of an engineer's mindset to a quantity surveyor's mindset, in terms of, like, if you had a graph of all the people's personalities, there would definitely be a difference. So it's just learning to try and adapt to, you know, giving more detail, asking questions that people, you could feel that they were afraid to ask you something, but you might just gloss over it to start with, and really remembering like some of the things that got you where you got to.
Yeah. And then what do you think changed them? Was it just confidence? Was it just, as you said, getting back to basics, taking the time to look at the process? You know what, I should have asked that question next time. I'm definitely going to ask it. And then just like recruitment does, right? It clicks, doesn't it? And as soon as you start feeling confident, you just start flying.
Yeah.
So was it just a combination of sort of all that hardship and you having the mindset of, you know what, let's look at my process. What did I do wrong there? What can I learn from? That then just gave you the best possible chance of getting that turning point.
Yeah, I mean, the business supported me. I think they could see that I was doing all the right things, and it was going to come. And the same when you're leading someone. As long as someone is turning up every day, has the right attitude, and they're learning from those mistakes, you know that they can make it. It's when one of those two things slips away, either the effort goes, the attitude goes, or they keep doing the same things over and over again. That's when it tends to, well, be a struggle.
Mm.
There's a lot easier jobs to do to earn a basic salary, definitely.
So ended up doing well back into the first year, qualified for the Bahamas trip. So why couldn't you go on that?
My dad ended up having to go into hospital. So he's forever to blame for that. But he was okay. It led to him having to have like a 5 heart bypass last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was in and out of intensive care last year for 3 months, which was another tough period, like working and then going to hospital. But
good.
He's on good. The
bend. He's been okay during this period.
He took a bit of convincing to go into lockdown, but he's been pretty good since.
He just thought, it's classic. Yeah, I'll be all right, John. What are you on about?
Well, I think when you've been through stuff like that, it makes you quite philosophical about life. So you either go one of two ways with it. You probably either are really worried, or you're just like, do you know what?
Whatever happens, happens.
Exactly. And he's definitely the latter. Where I get some of it from, like focusing on the things you can control.
Yeah. And I know that's sort of real common advice, but like when you really, really do that and you like really let that sink in, like that's what I definitely like. So for me, I ended up back at home in Eastbourne, living with my girlfriend's parents, their family home, because we've got a flat in London and it's been horrible to work from home. And it was really difficult because I had my routine, I was working in an office and all that. And then I was found myself working in a dining room table with my girlfriend's parents. I was like, is this real life? Like, what the fuck's going on? And you can really get caught quite easily in focusing and thinking about the things that you can't control. And it's just a loop. But when you actually take a step back and, well, actually, what can I control, and only focus on those things, it just really makes you feel lighter and sort of puts weight off your shoulders.
Yeah.
So I know you said that a couple of times, but like it's great. Yeah, I'm focused on the things that I can control. It's like, but are you? Like, do you know what I mean? It's one of them. But the second year then, let's talk about that and then sort of talk a bit about what's been going on for you and how you've been approaching things recently. But so I'm assuming then going into the second year, you had confidence, was excited. What went on in the second year?
So, I mean, first year ended well. Second year, we started to build out the team and we didn't quite hit the record for the brand, but I think we're pretty close to it. The second full year, which was kind of up until February, again, I think we achieved 50% growth.
Amazing.
In terms of GP year on year. So it was going well. And this year actually started pretty well as well. And then obviously the world changed beyond all recognition kind of overnight. And again, going back to focusing on the things you can control, there's a lot right now that you can't. I think if you read too much, if you spend too much time online, watch too much news right now, you probably fill your head with the wrong things. It's not... I don't think you should be naive to what's going on because there's things that are important. The protests over the last week or two for me has been a hand on heart. I'm uneducated. You know, I I've got some learning to do, and I'm spending some time doing that to make it a bit more in my control in terms of understanding. But there is a lot right now going on that is not necessarily super positive. And I have seen some people maybe suffer a little bit by focusing too much on those things. Whereas if, and even speaking to people out in the market, it feels like some recruiters have maybe gone back into their shell and just said, right, we'll call you after the summer. I feel a bit bad about talking to you right now. I feel people need your help more than ever right now. Candidates in need, business owners that are trying to navigate this like we all are, unprecedented being like the term that everyone's using, but never seen anything like this. The global financial crisis was not like this. Some companies still did well. Everyone could still meet.
Yeah, it's totally different.
It is different. There's the whole distance. Some industries, it's just such a jigsaw to put back together. But if you focus too much on that stuff, it could start affecting your ability to hit your goals. And you might need to adjust what those goals are. But I think as long as you're turning up every day and you're planned and you're speaking to people and you're still having the confidence that people will want to hear from you, from my own experience, people do. And actually, they really value your advice right now. They might not be recruiting. They might not want to talk about a role, but trust me, they want to know about what's going on in the market because they're at home. They're on their own. They're probably a bit lonely. They've spoken to their peers, but not outside of the group. They haven't been to many networking events. So again, like an example for now, I think if you focus on just having conversations with the view of trying to help people, I don't think you'll go far wrong.
And how have you gone about helping people then? Because I think some recruiters have done this really well, but how have you approached it?
I've put some stuff out, video content out on LinkedIn for job seekers. I recorded an interview last week, which we're going to put out with Andrew McCaskill, talking about some of the things people can be doing. So for those people that are coming to me asking for help as a job seeker, I wanted to be able to give them something if I can't give them as much of my time as I'd like, because around a two-year-old, your days aren't nowadays anymore. We've done a guide to remote onboarding, which has been well received, that we put out to a number of our clients and people that aren't our clients that we knew were hiring to say, look, we know you know most of this stuff, but hopefully this helps. I've been recording some podcasts with senior people within my sector talking about their journeys, similar to your.
Amazing.
To try and just give back to the ecosystem like you're doing, like you have done ever since, for a long time before this all happened. But just trying to bring value. I've connected some clients to each other so that they can talk about doing business together. Being a bit creative, I think.
No, I love that. And I think just whoever's listening right now, people will remember what you do during this period.
100%.
They just will. If all those things that you're doing, it enables you to have touch points with people in your market, enables you to get on the phone, speak to people. And that's really what you need right now. And I think one of the most common questions that I've got from this sort of live podcast or webinars over the last sort of 8-12 weeks was the business development piece. And I think it can be quite difficult, can't it? Because we've gone through that period of if you've called someone a couple of times and gone, hey, John, how are you doing? Just checking in, blah, blah, blah. Probably only so much you can still do that, but like for that to be the only reason you're calling could be a bit, you might be a bit like, I won't just call them. So I think it's like not forgetting what I keep reminding people is the recruiters that I work with the branding and stuff is like, don't forget that one of the biggest sort of the value that you can bring right now is that you're speaking to a lot of people like John that's having headaches that someone down the road is having, but they have no idea that they're going through that as well.
Yeah.
So, and that's what you're just talking about, right? It's enabling people to share and talk about their challenges or what they're doing so other people know and understand that it's not just them going through that. And that's one of the great things, like it's about connecting people, right? And that's 100%. One of the great things you can do right now through all different ways. I love that. That's awesome. And what's been some of the sort of biggest challenges for you then, John? Clearly, sort of have spent a lot of time developing yourself and mentally and professionally, clearly. What's been, obviously you mentioned your two-year-old a couple of times, so I can imagine that's a whole other challenge you've never had before, but what have been the biggest challenges for you?
I think managing a team remotely is a challenge. My wife actually manages a team half in the UK and half in Poland. So she's,
oh, wow.
So she's been really good in terms of just being normal. But trying to understand how people are really feeling is a bit more difficult when you're not
for a screen.
Yeah. Everyone's got a different situation. Everyone's got a different setup. Some people are probably enjoying it. Some people aren't. There's always a worry that if people tell you that they're struggling, that it could be seen negatively. So we've tried to be as upfront with that as possible. There's nothing. Everyone's got a different challenge right now. Navigating the whole business development piece is still a challenge. Trying to get that balance right between still doing activity but also expressing empathy.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking earlier this week about language to use in emails, in follow-ups, and trying to not seem insensitive, but at the same time, not overthink it so you don't do anything.
Yeah.
But content, coming up with ideas. I think I saw one of your polls that's probably people's biggest challenge is coming up with ideas of where to even start.
Yeah.
Something that everyone struggles with. I think... just write, every time you have an idea, write it down, put it in a central place. And if something keeps appearing, then there's probably some value in it. And actually things you talk about all the time, which are probably a bit boring to you, people that don't work in recruitment don't talk about all the time. Plus, as we're doing it all via video and you're not standing up in front of people, if you're not happy with it, you can just re-record it. And also a bit like my speech at my wedding, I probably got it wrong about 4 times, but no one knew. I didn't know what I was supposed to say. So just try and have a bit of fun with it. So we're trying to encourage our team to be active on social and have a bit of a presence to remind people that we're still there for them.
Still there, yeah.
Not try and be insensitive by pretending nothing's going on.
Mm. I think the sort of motivation and the managing team remotely has been hard for a lot of people. And again, a real common question that people had, I guess, has there been anything that you've sort of implemented or made non-negotiable in your weeks that have sort of impacted that, do you think?
I hope so. We have kickoff every day. We have a wrap up every day as a team. Everyone has to have their video on, which we got a bit lapsed on, but we've brought it back. We are doing socials. We've done quizzes. We're having our Friday sales meeting at the end of the week as a whole company, which I've hosted a few times for Europe. So that normally involves highlights of the week, bit of a wrap up of where we're at in terms of performance, some of the challenges, update on the office. We have like a few fun games, competitions, people win prizes. So we've sent like lunch to people's houses. We've sent them bottles of wine, just tried to keep them connected. I don't think when you talk to people out in the market, some people that are working at home, even if they haven't been furloughed, or some people that have been furloughed, just the not being communicated with. And that leads to worry. I don't think you can be communicating too much right now. So we've tried to get the balance right, but you know, I'm not the person to judge whether that's successful or not, but it feels like people have taken things positively.
Yeah, I think one of the, again, a common challenge has been that sort of you've probably got a speaking, if you're checking in with me and going, Heesh, man, finding it, what's going on? And I'm saying, John, you know what? I've had a good day, blah, 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 but there's just something in you going, I'm not sure. And it's hard to gauge that. I mean, one of the things that came out of it was during the mental health week was, I thought it was great. It was really simple, was ask how they are twice. Yeah, because I mean, how often does that happen? One. But normally it's just so easy for me to go, hey, John, how are you going? And it's just so easy to sort of give me a sort of subconscious response. It's like, yeah, I'm okay. But it's no, John, how are you? It's like, well, actually, yeah, how the fuck am I? So I know that.
You got a stock response for that question.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm making the best of it. That's what I normally say right now. Like, trying to make the best of the situation we're in. But you know, that's probably just my stock answer. Rather,
that's what I mean, yeah.
We don't probably take that approach to recruitment, do we? If you ask someone why they want to leave and they say progression, you probably don't just go, okay. you'd want to dig a bit deeper, wouldn't you, to understand what's underneath it. It's probably a couple of levels below. So I think that's a really good tip.
Mm. And then just before we finish, John, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of parents that listen to this. What, obviously I know when before we started this, you said it'd be a miracle if I don't get interrupted.
He doesn't burst in the office.
You've got a 2-year-old. You've got obviously a wife that's working as well.
Yeah.
So I guess how have you juggled that?
It was tough to start with. We just sit down every day and draw a plan out for the day. Yeah, to the exact minute. Who's got calls when? Her job involves quite a lot. She has to host WebExes and conference calls with lots of people involved. So I try and be a little bit more fluid. And then in the days that she's a bit quieter, or on the days that I know I've got time free, I just try and book as many calls as possible. I think that is a really good tip for people anyway. You know, booking a call with someone, even if it's in your own team, manages expectations, sets the precedent, allows you to prepare. But if you're booking a call with a client, it also helps with positioning.
Yeah, as in get it in the diary. Don't just say, yeah, John, I'll call you later today.
Yeah, it keep like working half of a day or 2/3 of a day in amongst looking after a 2-year-old does really focus your mind on what's important to get out of each day. And you need to be productive. I really struggled with it at the start, dipping in and out, because I feel like recruitment, you kind of find your flow when you're doing business development or you're like focusing on a task, you kind of get into it. Imagine that being trimmed down to 45 minutes. So at the start, I was struggling, but now I've got a better understanding of what I can fit into that time. So therefore, I can manage my own expectations a little bit better, be a bit less tough on myself when I don't get everything done. You know, this won't be forever.
Have you found switching off?
I think people talk about work-life balance, and I think there's nothing wrong with having working in the evenings if it's a choice. So try and take some time off. We try and go for a walk at the end of the day every day. You know, take him out, get some fresh air. We've created a running club group in the office, so we've committed to run 2,000 kilometers in June between us. So trying to get out, exercise to try and start the day or end the day. A bit like I think what you said in one of your other interviews, like having a defined point. But you know, normally we'll put him to sleep, have dinner, and then choose whether to switch back on or not. But try and have it for a defined period.
Yeah.
So I found it okay.
Mm. I think it's what you said about if it's a choice, then you're comfortable with that. Yeah, love that. So, John, what are you excited about? What are you excited about post-COVID, professionally, personally? What are you excited about?
I'm excited about just chilling in a beer garden with my mates, giving them a hug when I see them. I'm definitely excited about that, seeing people. I think most people in recruitment are social creatures, and video is great. If we didn't have video, this would be a lot tougher. I'm excited about that. Excited to go on holiday again at some point in the future. Although this year we're only planning to go in the UK anyway. I'm excited for the opportunities that this will bring. I think having worked through the GFC, on the back of that, there was some growth, and the people that were still there and still fighting and still able to carry on through it, you know, maybe they didn't break any records, but they kept the lights on, were the people that then it paid them back. So I think, you know, our CEO uses the phrase recruitment's in the post. So a lot of the stuff you're doing right now, if it doesn't give you that instant result, it's trying to just make sure that you're conscious that it's going to pay you back at some point.
How's that recruitment?
Excited to see what the future brings post all of this. Like, it's a terrible thing to happen, and you know, it's by no means positive at all. But you know, there may be some positives out of it, like flexibility for a lot of people, being less of a stigma as one.
Recruitment in the post.
Recruitment's in the post.
Recruitment's in the post. I love that. So look, last question. You can answer this with a phrase, a sentence, a word, whatever comes up for you. But if John Guest could communicate to every single recruiter out there, they'd listen, they'd take on your advice, they'd implement it tomorrow, what would you say to the people?
Just one thing. You win or you learn. Take that attitude into every day, and I think you'll make it pretty far.
I love that, John. John, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks, Hisham.
thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I really want to ensure this podcast remains valuable and relevant for all of you. If you have topics or questions you would love me to cover with future guests, then please get in touch with me. Best place to get me is on LinkedIn. Just search Hisham Azouz and drop me a message. I would love to hear from you. Finally, if you have 2 minutes, it would be greatly appreciated if you could leave an honest review for the podcast. It will simply mean that I can reach more people with this podcast. You can easily leave a review for the podcast by clicking the link in the episode notes or by going to ratethispodcast.com/rollercoaster. Thank you again for listening.